All right, folks, let's do this. I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. Please set your phones to stun, and let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, roll call, please.
Tom Wyszlinski.
Here.
Tom Gozdecki.
Here.
Anthony Broadnix. Absent. Derek Nimitz.
Here.
Dave Castellanos.
Here.
Ron Ware.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Here. Moving right along, next up is the approval of minutes from September 12, 2018. Modifications, changes, motions, what say you?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we approve the minutes as presented.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Be there none. All those in favor of putting these in the record forever, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Moving right along. Next up, Chairman's Report. Thank you first to everybody at the City of Holbrook for the hospitality. It's outstanding. To Mayor Senecor for letting us use his cool office and eat his cool snacks. I appreciate that as well the rest of the old guys. We take care of a $275 million man-made project. The board's not here, but what we'll do is make sure the things that happened in Holbrook and elsewhere throughout our community in 2008 don't happen again. If you don't take care of a man-made project, bad things will happen. So with help of folks in this room and others throughout the community, we were able to move forward, get it certified, take a lot of people out of having to pay mandatory flood insurance, take care of a lot of issues, do some good things, make sure those things don't happen again. Focus first and foremost is basic infrastructure. If you don't take care of the fundamentals, all the other cool stuff tends to have some challenges. I go through this quite a bit, and it doesn't get any easier. This community, as much as anybody, saw what happens when you don't take care of that. So it takes a while to take care of deferred maintenance that went on for generations. We're chiseling away at it, let's put it that way. And we appreciate that support. That said, next up is the finance report. We need approval of the claims and a motion for Mr. Repay to talk about that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion that we approve the claims for October of 2018 in the amount of $674,570.45.
Second. There's a motion and a second. Discussion, Mr. Repay. Pay the bills, baby.
So as before, I'll go over some of the higher amounts, and then if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. DLZ for $83,525 for the design of Kennedy Avenue Bridge. Later on, we'll give the authorization to go ahead and put that out for bid, hopefully in the next couple weeks. $47,000 for Patrick Engineering for the construction manager for the bridge over Deep River, which is right located just to the north of where we're at. Followed it up with Ellis Construction with $142,185 for Harrison Street Bridge, payment number 3. Wiltshire Excavating for $125,320 for debris removal out of Deep River. $42,735 for the operation and maintenance and installation of the stream gates. There's approximately, I believe, 15 of those. IHC Construction for $92,834.66 for the actual bridge project itself. That is payment 1. Unless I'm missing something that strikes me here, that's it. We have 95% of it is considered engineering or O&M of the claim sheet.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Repay on what's going on out there? Come on. We're in Holbrook. We've got to show that we're at least paying attention. We've talked about it 8 times, but we should talk about it in public.
What do you want to talk about?
Mr. Repay, you
yes.
did a lot of clearing in Deep River. Could you go through that a little bit?
That's correct. As a part of in our budget, we put aside money to help with some of the maintenance of Deep River. Most of everyone here is familiar with Hart's Ditch, which is a major tributary. Deep River has had some extensive trees down and blocking. We've had several folks come to us asking when that would be cleared out. We were able to secure some access through some residents that have allowed us into their yards, and we started cleaning some of that out. A lot of railroad ties and tires and down trees and trees that have been there for a long time. A lot of the neighbors have said that it hasn't been done in quite some time. So we're happy to do that. It helps with the flow, helps with the recreation component, and ultimately will hopefully prevent any future blockages at any other bridges or pinch points along the system.
Thank you. Any other questions with regards to the bills?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Dan, in regards to Harrison Street Bridge, mm-hmm. I don't know what the original date of the project tracker. That's probably something we should add.
I think we awarded it in August, if I remember correctly, for Harrison. There is, as we've talked about in the previous meeting, there is been or has been a delay because a utility had changed their plan as to how they were going to reroute their utilities. So they're able to do some work in that area, but a lot of the major work has to be put off until that utility gets permission to bore underneath the levee to change their utility pattern, lack of a better word.
Is there any estimation of this dragging out through winter, or is it something that's going to be complete during the fall? Or?
From the update that I got and where they're at in the process, they have just a couple more weeks, my understanding, to get it through. There's one in DNR and there's one at the Corps, and I've already spoken with the Corps and the regulatory folks about where that was in the process. So they don't see to be a problem with it the way it was directed to them. I haven't talked to DNR, but I think DNR's issue was more of a just a, it's a 30-day window that they have to just wait for comments.
Okay. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else? There's a motion and a second to approve the claims. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Ruslinski.
Yes.
Tom Gosdecky.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. All right, next up, Project Tracker, what's going on in the field? Dan, let's talk about something close to our current GPS.
Which one is that?
Which is something that's going on in Hobart.
Well, I'll just go down the list. It's easier for me because I'm old. So I'll work through all of them. Got a gallbladder problem. 35th. That's no joke. 35th and Chase, we're in the. We still have the retainage. They have some items that they need to clear up before we give that out. But Dyer has said that they will finish that before winter. The railroad bridge replacement, as you see, and as you, if you drove in from the Old Ridge Road, you'll see that is started. We have meetings every week for coordination purposes. We get updated from Patrick Engineering on that. And I should remember the exact day that it started, but it began in September, and the coordination so far has been good with all parties, including the city. Harrison Street Bridge, we spoke about the issues related to that. Chase Street Bridge shall be starting here shortly. That same utility has agreed with the plan now, and now we're going to put that pedestrian bridge over through Gary Up, who is the general contractor. We have to do some tree clearing in that area just to make it a little bit more accessible, but that will be done before December 1st from what I'm being told. Clark Road adjustment has started. In my report to you guys earlier, it's still anticipated to be complete by the end of this month. They've already raised it. They've already put the initial grade down, and we anticipate them to start blacktopping from about 100 feet from the railroad on the south side all the way to, I keep on saying, is that 27th? I think it's 27th Street on the north. Kennedy Avenue Bridge, we spoke about with the claim, but we're anticipating that to be bid out between this meeting and next. Depending on when we get it, the due date for that bid will be either November or December to give enough time for the contractors to put together a comprehensive package. All pump stations are good. The easements we're working on and land acquisitions, we're still waiting final word from the Corps. The Corps, this is their off meeting, so they will not be here, so it's a little bit difficult to get their side of the story. Inspections, so that's all for Project Tracker, unless I missed something that was outstanding or anything.
All right, anything from Mr. Repe as it relates to what's going on in the field?
I guess, Dan, being in Hobart here,
yes.
Can you give a little more detail on the bridge project going on? Is residents here?
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, to give you great detail of what's, I mean, they're starting to build the shoot fly, which is the end around, so that they can eventually take out that bridge component of it. Once that's done, the scheduling, my understanding is, once that shoot fly is built, they'll be able to reroute the traffic around, take down the existing structure, and then start constructing the new, and then they'll convert it back to over the top of the new span, which I believe is 120-foot span from side to side. So right now they're just doing the preliminary work so that they can get a train through that area. From attending the meetings, there's extensive coordination with the flagging and the direction and the scheduling of the trains, and where the trains can be in certain areas and how much work can be accomplished. It started off a little bit on the rough side because of the train being through this area around 7 a.m. and there's certain distances that have to be maintained before any construction equipment can be brought on site. But that's all being worked out, and from what I'm told and all the reports that I've gotten, which I have one here that I could boringly read through, again, for everyone here, is on schedule and work's being done. So there has been no delay. There has been no extension of the completion. The completion should be May 1st of 2019 for the whole project, which will ultimately free up the park again so that the city can utilize it for their busy season, because they have it pretty well packed in there.
Understood. Thank you.
What was our total number on that project?
$4.396 million.
Thank you.
Plus Patrick.
Well, plus Patrick, right. But the construction cost is $4.396. Patrick is...
Wait, the engineers are all here. They all want to get paid.
$3.50.
They were just happy that you approved the claims, because that's what they're waiting for.
No, they're waiting for the check.
I don't see behind me. I can't tell.
Oh, they're here. All right, anything else? All right, all right, moving right along. Next up is, are you done with your executive director's report too, Dan?
I think so. I mean, unless there's a particular question for items, but I basically taken care of all the projects that we've got ongoing that are important to the public, I think. We have a hard ditch study that was, given to us. We are working to see if how to fix some of that or some of those issues. And in these boxes,
it's not the whole project, though, right?
They looked at the areas from Maine.
Hold on a second. Just got the two tributaries feeding the Little Cal, Deep River, which we sit here, and I call it to.
All right.
And then Hart Ditch, which is on the west side of the county. So this one over here has a lot of volume coming through it. There's a lot of people living on the one in Hart Ditch. And what's happening on that side of the watershed is the volume that's coming down is causing the banks to collapse, which is getting closer and closer to some of the structures that are over there. So, that's the next phase of the deferred maintenance that we inherited after the floods of 2008.
In Deep River, the houses are along the river, but they're a little bit further back in most cases. Some of them are closer than others, but in Hart's Ditch, they're almost on top of it, or very, very close. In these boxes and envelopes is the Lake Station levy proposals that we sought from engineers. Maybe that's why they're here as well. We're in a little in the proposals we said that weren't going to release the numbers that were in here, although numbers aren't the only factor that is going to be accounted for in the selection process. of the folks that are going to design it. Mm-hmm. So if you would allow me to open this, but I'm not going to disclose anything just for the sake of they're going to be sealed just like they gave them to us by 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock today. And then we will then take them back with us. Lake Station is involved and the county, Lake County Parks is involved, so that we can sort of decipher and see what's going on and then maybe eliminate some folks that may have missed the mark or that just were out there, and then we're going to have to be able to interview a couple of them later on in the process.
All right, before we do the motions on that, Mr. Wicklin, from the standpoint of having that contingency in the spec docs, what can we do to make sure, you know, whoever is upset doesn't throw the red flag, if you will, to have it get reviewed again and the process for Dan to open up these things?
Well, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is you're going to meet and interview all of these bidders, right?
Correct. And we're going to have questions back and forth. And then ultimately, there's going to be a point where we're going to only be able to have presentations from a couple. Maybe they're all will get interviews or presentations, but I'm assuming they're all going to get it right? Just like everyone. And then at that point, you know, we'll have to make decisions. But they came in sealed. We couldn't open them. I didn't want to open them.
Because of the terms of the bid or the advertisement, I think that you open them and keep confidential
the
knowledge. Sure.
I love government. All right. What else?
That's really it.
All right. Anything else for Mr. Repay before I move down the agenda? Giddy up. Next up is a presentation from the City of Hobart.
Are you going to make me open these or no?
No, that's not next. No.
Oh, okay. Is that someplace?
It's not down there, so.
It's not on here.
You can still have
it.
It'll be after this thing.
Hey, I've got toys. So, gentlemen, thank you for coming out. My name is Bob Fulton, and I work for Mary's Medicare here in the City of Hobart. I'm also the president of the Hobart Stormwater Management Board for the city. And one of the things I've come to the board about tonight is some help with a pilot project that we want to consider doing here on Lake George, bioaugmentation of treatment of Lake George. We're here to ask for your support dealing with sedimentation of the lake. Lake George is a dammed river. They are prone to sedimentation. Over the past few years, the lake has continued to fill in and we're at the point now where in 2001 we dredged. It was an expensive process. We took out large amounts of material from the lake. And after we took it out, we've actually got a 6-acre site that the city has built, put in drainage so it can dewater. And we continue to this day to maintain this site because the material we took out was deemed not necessarily safe for land application. So we've had that ongoing maintenance ever since. Dredging is, one, expensive, and two, the byproducts of it are maintenance for a long time. And in the intervening years, the lake has continued to fill in. Earlier this year in February, we had a heavy rain event, a 100-year flooding event. And one of the things that happened is that volume of water came through town and hit our dam. It caused cracks at the dam, and we were forced to effect the repairs by lowering the level of the lake. So we dropped the level of the lake in February through March, and I think we finally brought it back up again. Was it in June when we effected the repairs? Our city engineer, Phil Braylock. And give you an idea of what we discovered when we dropped the lake. If you look at the picture, that's off of our county website. That's a portion of Lake George, and it starts at the railroad, the old EJ&E railroad bridge, which in 2001 was the limit of where the dredge was. That's the furthest upstream part of Lake George, and as we lowered the level of the water here, if you look at, there's a line going across there, if you look from the railroad bridge off to that promenade, to that point where that house is at, in February and March, that's what the lake looked like. Literally, there was probably no more than a foot of water. Mr. Hendricks is here. When they did the study of Deep River and the whole watershed, their surveying crew was challenged to actually get a John boat back into that part of the lake that was so shallow. It's been an ongoing problem. Most of the people that live at that part of the lake no longer use their piers because there's no point in trying to put a boat in 6 inches of water. You'd be better off putting a rubber duck in there.
Is that line you're talking about the red line that goes at a diagonal, or the line that goes north?
It's a line going on a diagonal across.
Okay. I just wondered which line there's. That must be a picture of it.
Yeah, that's a flaw, I think, in the county's website.
Okay, thank you.
This is the diagonal line. And again, lake needs to be dredged again. And frankly, dredging is the most expensive way we can go forward. And it's been an obstacle for the city to want to undertake that. So I'm not here to say, geez, little Cal, would you give us $3 million for a dredge? That's not what I'm here about. What I'm here about is, for several years, for something completely different. We'll talk about bioaugmentation. Bioaugmentation is basically the introduction of bacteria into the biomass at the bottom of the lake. We've been working, and Joe Huffel from Park Aquatics is here. They have been working with the city dealing with invasive species. We have an increase in invasive species, particularly that area I was showing the picture in, because the water's so shallow. It makes it possible for invasive plants to take hold and then squeeze out the native vegetation that's in that area. We have been treating it, trying to hold it down, and we've actually made some headway and are holding our own. But again, we're going out and treating the lake, and the Department of Natural Resources is, and a 279-acre lake will not allow us to treat more than 27.9 acres, 10% of that lake. So it's kind of hard to treat everything when you have to specifically target in your little 10% window of those things. So we don't get everything, and it continues to evolve. We're still getting the problem. And they came to us. They had been working, and Joe, they'd been working on a lake in Michigan. I don't remember the name, you do.
Lake Templain.
Lake Templain, which is a dammed river lake in Michigan, about 600 acres, that faced some of the same problems we did. And they pointed out that they have been using bioaugmentation to address the issues of sedimentation in this dammed river lake. Bioaugmentation, adding active bacteria is matched to what's down in the lake, where you can go through, you add in the bacteria, it actually augments what's there and accelerates the digestion process of the organic material in the lake. One of the things where bioaugmentation is most commonly used is actually in wastewater treatment plants. The organic matter in a wastewater treatment plant, they augment with bacteria to dissolve the solids. And the advantages are it's not necessarily a chemical or mechanical process. There's a lot less overhead involved in doing this kind of thing. Some of the other uses, and I don't know how many of you are like me, taking your probiotic pills, that's a form of bioaugmentation. It's used in animal feed operations. It's used in agriculture to remove nitrogens and all of that from soils, used for treating odors. It's used for all sorts of other resource developments. Bioaugmentation is something that we've taken for granted, but it's there all the time. And what you do in developing the plan is you go through and you kind of find out what are your indigenous materials and in what quantity they are. You try to find out if there's any capacity for the bacteria to actually treat them, and then you add those things in to do it. Saying that, what's it have to do with Lake George? We've already taken those samples. We've sent them off to a lab. that lab has taken, and basically, as I understand the process, gentlemen, I'll need your help. They put it in a digester. They have it there for 3 months to analyze what bacteria will do to those samples, and then come back and tell you what's in there. One of the things that came back from the places where they pull samples in Lake George is that most of the material in Lake George is between 20 and 30, 31% actually organic material. That's plants that have grown on the lake and died and become part of the sedimentation at the bottom of the lake. When you go over and you see the lake and there's that green duckweed on top of it, in the fall when it gets cold, it dies and sinks to the bottom. All of the plants that die and go down there, they sink to the bottom, they begin to decay, and they become part of that biomass at the bottom of the lake. I was going to say, and if you look, those are the areas, and I know it's a small picture, I can't make it much bigger. Those are the pictures where we took the samples. The one in the upper left is actually just beyond the area where I showed you the picture of the lake in February. Another one is right by our middle school. One of them is an area that in town is referred to as Carruthers Bayou. It's down towards Festival Park. And then the third one is, again, a bayou that is by one of the neighborhoods west of the Wisconsin Street Bridge, the shallowest part of the lake. Because of this, Lake George is a really good candidate for bioaugmentation. There aren't a lot of other things other than pure sediments that are in the lake that would interfere with the bacteria's ability to work. If we apply it, it's going to settle down in there and begin the process. We asked Clark to come up with an idea of what it would cost to do this for a couple of years. That number was $149,000. First year cost around $55,000. I've talked with the mayor. He wanted to come to you and say, look, can we partner on this? Can we become 50-50 partners going forward with this pilot project? We think it has the possibility of being able to give us a pilot idea of how we can deal with creating more volume for water in Lake George without having to go through the difficulties involved and the great expense involved in the mechanical dredging. It's the kind of thing that can go on, and as we go down the road, my suspicion is the evolution of it as we treat down here, and if it works, and you guys wish to adopt it for some of the areas you're monitoring upstream, we can start at that point cutting back on the amount of organic material that forms in the lake and improve water quality, improve the capacity of the lake to hold water. One of the things, you know, that I think of is as the lake becomes more and more filled in, we're going to get, you know, I was looking at the grain gauge last week. Down south of US 30, your gauge showed the deep river in about 4 hours went up, foot and a half.
It could be there.
That's the water heading down here. If our bottom of our lake is coming up, that foot and a half of water is going to lay on top of the higher bottom. It's going to push it up higher and higher and higher. One of the great advantages of Lake George and why we don't have the problems they have along Hart Ditch, Lake George has pretty high banks. So most of our people are up out of the water. But as the lake keeps coming up, that water is either pushing further back upstream or moving higher and higher up towards the property. So we think it's really important that we start with the program that will help us address the issues of maintaining the bottom depth at a manageable point. I've got some information about what happened in Michigan. And they found over the course of a couple of years, they created about 11 inches of additional depth. 187,000 cubic feet of material they took out. The cost, $1.1 million. And I said, well, hold it. that's almost as much of a dredge. And they said one of the things about it, one, if you'd done a dredge up there at Lake Champlain, it would have been about $4 million. Lake Champlain was challenging the fact that because of the nature of the material in the lake, you guys were required to do aeration.
Correct.
So you had to build a mechanical aeration system to agitate the bottom of the lake. That's something that doesn't have to happen in Lake George. So our cost is merely the cost of the product and the application of the product. So one of the things that we think, if we can come to some kind of understanding and I can get with the mayor, literally, we, as long as the water is above 50 to 60 degrees, we can start working this year. If not, we'll have to start again when the water temperature is back up. But we think 12 inches of gain is a minimum we can expect. I would think that we may see more. Some of these areas we may approach 18 to 24 inches of increase in water volume. And the other thing about it is it's in the channels that go upstream. It's going to, in some instances, going back towards Deep River and Turkey Creek. I spoke to some of the people from the National Park Service. If it is a viable alternative, it becomes a viable alternative across the entire watershed, which may give us the ability to address this sedimentation and filling in of all of the water. I know, I was thinking in terms of your job of maintaining levees. As the water comes up, as the bottom comes up and the water comes up, you're pushing up higher and higher and higher against the levee and creating more mechanical force against it. I think anything that might provide a low-cost alternative to maintaining that depth and keeping the bottoms from filling in has to be a benefit for the entire watershed. So I'm hoping, based on just eyeballing about treating 25% of the lake and seeing 12 inches of increase, I think we'll see a cost of about $1.33 a cubic foot versus, if you're doing a mechanical dredge, your cost per cubic foot is probably 10 times that. So I think, we're bringing this to you. We're pretty committed to going forward with it, but we want to involve you because we believe that there's benefit for both of our organizations. So, and I understand we would have to work out some of the details, and I understand there's, interlocal agreement, see Mr. Whitman there, that we would have to work out. But I wanted to bring this to the board because we think it's a great opportunity to accomplish something that's been on our mind for several years. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Fulton. Question? Mr. Gazdecki.
The 12 inches of gain that you guys project you might get, is that over the entire lake?
Well, the areas that we treat, there's some portions of the lake, frankly, if we went out to the main basin close to the dam, the water there is almost 10 feet deep. What happens, and this is one of the things that, is borne out in the Deep River watershed study, as the water comes from Deep River and Turkey Creek and comes together and hits the area of Lake George, particularly back up there, the increased space allows for a lowering of the volume, and it allows more of the sediment to drop out, and I think is how it appeared in the report. So there are areas of the lake that fill in faster and more than other areas of the lake. As it gets further and further up towards the dam, the lake continues to get deeper and deeper and deeper because there's simply less of the sediment that's still suspended in the water to drop out and fill in. So, no, treating the whole lake wouldn't really necessarily be something we have to do. We would just have to get the areas where we know there's high sediment.
So the $150,000 only for these certain areas?
Yes. We figure about 25% of the lake is mostly the upstream riparian areas, the areas where we have inlets that move back. And if you go to some of the inlets, even now, if you walk into some of the inlets, by Fred Rose Park in that area, you would basically take a step out and hit about a foot of water and then sink into your knees in the muck at the bottom of the lake or the inlet. But it's those areas upstream that we've seen the most increase in sediment patients.
Do you have an idea on the number of acres that you're talking about that are being treated?
Spitballing it, I would have thought it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 65. It's about a quarter of the way.
Now, is this an annual application, or what's the maintenance after the 150?
Well, it's a two-year program, and at that point, we're going to monitor and see where we're at and adjust. Because, one, it's a pilot. If it's not giving us the results, the definition of a foolish man is one who does the same thing over and over again and expects different results. If we don't get the results we're looking for, we're back to dealing with the possibility of a mechanical dredge. What we're trying to do is exhaust every feasible possibility before we determine that the only thing going forward would be a dredge.
This being a two-year plan, is this something that you address the 60 acres that you talked about this year and you hit them again then next year to try to...
Yes, as I understand it, and I'll let Mr. Huffle speak to some of that.
Right.
He's
so,
the guy that has to do it.
So the idea is that we're attacking all the organic material in the lake, the places where you took the samples, and then the bacteria also targets organics throughout the lake. The idea is to keep targeting those zones with the product to encourage those zones to continue to go deeper. It's important to note that the product will not attack silt, dirt, things that are not organic in nature. So as far as the question of could it be more than 60 acres, certainly. The monitoring will tell us that. So those quarterly reports after our monitoring program will show those decreases in those areas. You may find efficacy in other areas as well as a byproduct of the treatment. Because of those areas, it's kind of hard to have that underwater microscope in a sense. We're measuring depth. But yes, we would wholeheartedly attack those zones each and every year.
Is the monitoring part of the 150?
Correct.
And then what are the thresholds when you monitor? I mean, you pull the muck up or whatever. What are you looking at?
So we're merely looking at reduction. So we have a baseline measurement of the bottom hardness and sediment. And after each application, we allow the product to work. And then we monitor again to look at those reductions.
Back to the same spot.
Exactly. So when we monitor the lake, we're going to monitor the lake in its entirety. We're not just going to monitor the zone. We're going to look at the whole lake. So that every single monitoring session is exactly the same. So then we can see those reductions in those target zones.
Now, obviously the water keeps moving through here. How does that work as new rains come and more material keeps coming into the area? How is that affected as far as your monitoring program?
Sure. So the bacteria goes in the water. The bacteria will then want to eat. And that will automatically target the bacteria or that anaerobic bacteria in the bottom immediately. You will get rain events, you will get water movement and such. The topography of the bottom of the water will change over time. That won't affect the organic composition that's there. It may look a little different, but we'll still be able to monitor the organic nature during each session. So
theoretically, it's going down.
Theoretically, it's going down. The bacteria is eating what's there, and then it's reducing itself, and then again, it's a three-treatment program throughout the year, so what we call is a main loading dose, or as some call it, a shock treatment, that initially goes in. And then that's followed by maintenance doses of a lower part per billion count of bacteria each time, so you're continually feeding those areas through the course of the year. It's not a one-and-done, per se. It's a multiple.
Mr. Fulton called it a pilot program. Wouldn't the pilot program have already been done in that lake in Michigan? And how did that end up coming to be a benefit? Or what did you learn from that you're bringing here to this proposal?
Right. So as far as a pilot program in nature, this is technology that's been around for many years. I would say it's pilot to Lake George specifically. For Lake Templin, within the 3 years that we've been doing these treatments, we've seen reductions in some areas of 2 feet, 3 feet, even 4 feet. Now, every lake is different, especially in St. Joe County, Michigan, where their issue was a organic sediment consisting of a fibrous peat material, which is almost like a mossy material that requires more of a prescriptive-based bacteria. In the case of Lake George, you have a wholly organic in nature bacteria, 20 to 30%. So we use the different type of prescription on Lake Templine, although the same process and the same material in nature. Every lake is different, so results aren't really apples to apples because of Mother Nature in a sense. So the product that we're going to be using, taking those four samples that we took, was a prescription based solely for Lake George. So almost as like getting that prescription from the doctor to treat Lake George. The prescription for Templine was different in that case as it was on every other lake that we've done. So the results would speak for themselves. That's why we have to monitor it. And the results could be quicker than we've seen on Lake Templine. They could be a little slower. It's really hard to say. So that's why we monitor it throughout the course.
You called one in Michigan more of a peat moss type of material. How would you classify this one?
No fibrous peat material in Lake George.
So what does that mean?
Solely organic. So you're talking
leaves and sticks.
Animal droppings and other things that are going to...
Dead plants.
Bologna sandwiches, stuff like that.
Exactly. So it's very organic.
All right. Any other questions?
So when you did your survey, did you take like a core sample?
Yes.
And how deep was that core sample?
Very deep.
And what is the average depth of organic material? Is that where the 12 inches comes from?
Or? Right. So the idea of a core sample is to take that, it's PVC, essentially, 2-inch PVC with caps on either end, and we stick it as far down as we can go, essentially hitting hard pan, what we call hard pan, which is stone, rock, gravel, whatever. There's nothing left. And then within that sample, it analyzes the entire core going down. And that's what we did in each one of those locations. That sample in water is going to have a higher volume. When we pull it out and put it into a jar, it essentially takes that water out of it, sucks it out, and then those sat in the United Kingdom in their vaults, essentially, and that's where they came up with the formulation for Lake George.
The City of Hobart, you've made this presentation to the City of Hobart. They're all on board with this?
Talked to the mayor about it. We're at the point now, we've got to try to do something. Literally, when we had our drawdown of the dam, and I got a phone call not 4 days ago from a lady concerned because for all these years, she lived in one of those channels that goes off of the lake. And she said, we used to have water there, and now I've got nothing but mud. Are you going to bring the water back up on the lake? Don't know, because it's filling in as fast as the water comes there. So what water you see, you may not want to see the water, because when it comes in, it'll come in a rush, and it's going to be a couple of feet higher than you normally used to see. You know, it's just been an ongoing issue for several years now. And we're committed to finding a way to deal with it. And frankly, a dredge, it's infinitely more expensive than it was in 2001.
Mayor?
Yeah, I think it's probably important, too, that he touches on the impact of the safety, the public safety, fishing impacts to, you know, we have a lot of tournaments that go on our lake throughout the summer, so it's becoming more and more of a used lake. A lot of activity, recreation now going on, kayaking, there's a lot of things going on the lake. So I think the impact, if you could speak to that, I think that's going to be,
Sure. So when you have that organic material in a lake, what that does is create nitrogen and phosphorus. And those are the two enemies in algae buildup and weed growth, particularly invasive weeds. So for the years that we've been working on Lake George, our main goal has been to encourage native vegetation to thrive and reduce that invasive vegetation. The organic material that sits in there every year only creates food for everything to grow, not only the good stuff, but the bad stuff. So it is imperative that you reduce that organic volume inside of Lake George, considering you also have other, it's basically being fed every year. And if you don't stay on top of it, the gains will far outweigh the decreases. So in a sense, that's number one. As far as the fisheries, and other things like that. These treatments will not affect those. They do not lower dissolved oxygen. They do not affect how the temperature of the water and things of that nature. What it does is solely eat the organic material in the lake. So it will not impact any recreation, in fact. Bob also touched on it a little bit. These areas that used to have water that don't have water, that's a concern. Obviously, there's the aesthetics of the lake, there's the recreation of the lake for the community. And reducing that organic, think of it as just, you know, mud sitting on top of rock. And we do have products, and we've had these products for years, that will target that mud and get your depth back, which has many impacts to that as well. Our treatments are completely safe. They're injected into the water through our system. It's not surface sprayed. There's no adverse effects. Our pumps are quiet. You won't even hear us treating. There's many ways that we go to great lengths to make sure that there's no impact on anyone in the environment at all.
Your Lake Templine, is that the name of it? Lake
yes, Templine.
Okay. And how long did you guys, how long was the treatment period? Or are you guys, is it an ongoing treatment period?
It's ongoing still.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so how long has it been, I guess, under treatment?
The four years.
Okay. And during that four-year period, you reduced it down beyond the 12 inches up to as much as over 24 inches?
Right. So the big takeaway with Lake Templine is the original plan to dredge 4 years ago with the amount of material that was being proposed to pull out. Through bioaugmentation, after 4 years, we've removed more mass than what was originally proposed for the dredge, and they've spent a quarter of the initial money. That's the big takeaway for them. So they're continuing to monitor that, and as Bob said, they have to have aeration. Aeration speeds up the process of the bioaugmentation. Because of the flow that you have already in the lake, there's enough movement and less stagnant water. There's something called, not to get too technical, but there's a thermocline. Anyone who's gone swimming in a lake, the top half of your body is warm, and then as you go down, it's colder. So they call that the thermocline, and when you make these applications, that's why the water temperature is imperative. You don't want the water temperature to be too cold down low, because then the bacteria won't work.
So maintaining the 50 to 60 degree is with the pumps, and the pumps have heat pumps, or?
Correct. It sort of, it de-stratifies the water. Typically with Lake George, when we take our water quality samples and our temperature, the water is very consistent throughout because of the movement and the natural flow, if you will. Which is why aeration is not necessarily needed in this instance. Certainly, in some of your more shallower areas, it could help speed that process up, but that's something that could be addressed down the road.
The bacteria, it doesn't reproduce naturally, so I mean, it would be great if you installed this bacteria and it was going to be able to reproduce and affect the lake over a longer period of time as opposed to repeat applications. I mean, is that the case?
Yeah, so there's a point in time where the bacteria, we don't use nearly as much bacteria as we did initially on Lake Templine, just because of the reduction. We've gotten down the hard pan in a lot of areas, so those areas are continually monitored. We may not be treating those areas. So the introduction of this, and remember, it's a special blend formula, so it's prescriptive based. In 2 to 3 years, that formula can change. And the good news is the fibrous peat material that we're targeting on Lake Templine is far more expensive than the off-the-shelf, if you will, prescription. So you do have to continue to encourage that new bacteria in there to allow them to eat and reduce that. However, they don't reproduce in a way that you could just leave them in there and they go. They eat and then they move on.
Any concerns about the consistency of the sediment here? Looking at 20 to 30%, I envision reduction, a septic system, mm-hmm, has bacteria in it, you still are required to pump it out eventually. So any thoughts about the percentage of the organic material in the sediment here?
Yeah, so the percentage of organic material in the sediment is greater than 30% in all the areas that we sample. Okay. And what that will tell you is that once you get rid of that organic material, what you're left with is what you're left with. It's essentially Mother Nature. Of course we encourage the watershed upstream to have good best management practices and fertilizing habits and cutting your lawn close to shore, fire pits, things like that will encourage that. part of what we can do as well is offer literature to sort of give to the community, to sort of say we're doing this bioaugmentation on Lake George. Here are the things that you can do to help the community, not only yours, but the surrounding communities. And that just more education in general. And that will help that as well. So you're going to get to a point where you're always going to be fighting organic material, just the nature of Lake George. You just won't see those buildups and the stagnation of it all in the end. So it will be an ongoing maintenance program, but you should see those costs reduce over the years once that material is on its way out.
Thank you. I have a question. The lake that you're in, Lake Champlain, what was the quality of life after you did your project for the residents in that area?
Sure.
And also the economic impact. And also like to know that after this particular project was done, was there any real estate development? Would it increase more residents in that area? Because normally when you do something like that, that necessarily creates some type of panorama for people who want to live by. And I'm just curious, what did it do and how long did it take?
Right. So certainly not an expert on the ongoings of the government in that area. But what I will tell you is that number one thing is increased property value. So when you have a high-profile account like we do with Lake Champlain, it's very heavily traveled. It's a recreational lake. It's about 900 acres in St. Joe County, which is heavily traveled for people from Chicago, a lot of summer homes over there. And one of the big concerns, obviously, was nobody wants to be on this lake when you go for a swim in your swim area and you're 3 foot in muck. And, you know, a lake down the road has a nice sandy bottom. So that was... you know, in come this bioaugmentation system, and that encouraged that reduction. Certainly, we're still ongoing over there, but I will say that the depth of the water, too, the boats will change. So a lot of people that have, you know, John boats or, you know, just regular 12-foot fishing boats are now switching to pontoons, and they have pontoons and some sailing boats. So you can change the types of boats that are on the lake because you're creating more depth. A lot of the fishing will improve. So the fish have more places to go when they have a little more depth. Going back to the invasive versus the native vegetation in the lake as well, same concept. If the fish have less place to go or spawn, you're going to see, you know, your fish being smaller and less place to go. So I would say 100% recreation, property value, and the fisheries improvement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Just ask one. From the presentation of the city, I remember you saying that these are naturally occurring bacteria.
Yes.
They're there. You're just manipulating the number of them that are there, and then they die off and
correct.
Go downstream, so they have to be replenished. This isn't some bioengineered bacteria that could be
right.
A hazard.
So part of the testing is to determine what's the bacteria that's already there. It's a very good point. We're not introducing a new form of bacteria into the water. We're just... ramping it up, if you will, the amount that's there to help fight the fight to get rid of the organics.
So does that mean right now the existing bacteria currently helps to decrease
correct.
The amount to some degree?
Correct. Okay. Correct. Just what nature gives you in those organic material.
Okay.
And this is just adding more
okay.
friends to the bar.
Okay.
Just one last question. I kind of pulled up. We've got these fancy new computers, and I can see Lake Champlain working on this for 5 years, and they have 13 compressors, it indicates, with their aeration heads and everything like that. You earlier stated you don't think that that'll be necessary here, or it will not be necessary here?
So right now, I don't think it's necessary, but as we move forward with the project, it certainly could be. Part of what Lake Champlain's issue was is they have a lot of different bays and coves. So that creates, in itself, stagnant areas. And those aeration units are mainly in those cove areas. And that is just, and again, remember the stratification. Aeration systems will churn water in a circular motion. And aeration is not necessarily pumping air to aerate the water. It's causing the water to go from a cold zone to a hot zone up top, and then it recirculates. So that bacteria will then just roll over and find new places to eat. So typically, if there's some harder areas that we're struggling with on Lake George or any other areas, aeration would be the number one tool to speed up the process even quicker.
And that would be something that, as down the road, if we find an area that's particularly resistant, we could look at that.
Right.
but that has to increase your cost substantially.
Yes.
Sure. Okay.
What was the total investment to make that plane?
$1.1 million as opposed to
I think $4.5 million for them to do a mechanical dredge,
right,
and 1.1 to do the bio-augmentation. And that was over 2015 through 17.
Right, and that spend is still there.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Obviously, we'll take a look at that. That's some pretty cool stuff. All right, Mr. Ipe, I know you really want me to let you open those things, so please open those things, even though it's not on the agenda. I think it's important that gets taken care of.
It's like Christmas in October. You don't have to wait for me. I'm just going to open. There's not enough in a report.
Right. Okay, then I'll keep moving along. Other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make a motion that we authorize the executive director to go ahead and advertise for bids on the Kennedy Avenue Bridge project.
Second. Motion and a second. So, Mr. Ipe, while you're having Christmas, what bids are you looking to get? This is the actual construction?
This is for the actual construction of the Kennedy Avenue Bridge, which will be probably over a two-year period of construction, so that we maintain traffic in each direction.
Okay. All right, motion and a second. Any other discussion, questions for Mr. Ipe? Mrs. Lambert.
One question, Mr. Chair.
You've got to go quiet for Mr. Whitaker. Come on.
You're moving kind of fast. Just one quick question. What does this do? Just for edification for the audience.
Kennedy Avenue is one of the earliest closure structures. It raises above and equal to the 200-year plus 3-foot elevation between Highland and Hammond. So we will no longer have to close that once the level at Kennedy, I think, reaches 13.5 feet.
And we will eliminate the necessary, sandbags?
Sandbags, blocks, everything.
Okay.
It'll maintain traffic.
There's also a feature to it, correct?
Well, there are some features. Just the bike trail is probably the most prominent one. Currently, the bike trail goes above or at grade, and then afterwards it'll be below or underneath the road itself. It'll be safer for all those involved.
Thank you.
Yeah, just so you know, I mean, as part of how this was designed along the Little Cal, as far as the federal project was concerned, part of what the plan was by the federal government is in the middle of these rainstorms, we would have to go to a lot of different areas along the system and throw sandbags. So you can imagine, you saw what it was like here in 2008, to do all of that, and to go to every one of these municipalities and every one of these particular openings or bridges and have to build sandbags and closures tends to be a little arduous. So we've been eliminating the amount of places that are required to have sandbags in an event, so first responders can pay more attention to other issues during one of those events as opposed to putting down sandbags.
This was probably easily over 2,000 sandbags, probably.
Well, both Highland and Hammond both switched over to just blocks,
okay,
just to close them because of there was four lanes of traffic plus a sidewalk and a middle median. So they converted from out of sandbags to blocks, but the blocks were stored for Hammond in Central Hammond, and for Highland it was at their Public Works garage just next door.
And we did a test run on that.
We've done two.
How long did it take?
2.5 hours. We started those at midnight.
That's all, Mr. Chair.
All right, that's all for me, too. Mrs. Lab, we've got a motion and a second.
Tom Brzezinski?
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki?
Yes.
Derek Nimitz?
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes.
Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we go ahead and authorize the executive director to seek proposals for tree clearing in the Lake Station area where we're planning on putting the new berm.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion, Mr. Ipe?
As a part of the levee that's going to be designed, we are going to clear all the trees in that area so that the new levee can be designed easily and ultimately built. So it's best to do it at this point in time or in the spring when the leaves are not on the trees.
Mr. Repay, I like trees. Why would we want to take down trees?
It's a necessary evil to protect over 250 residents and houses in Lake Station between 29th and Wyoming and Liverpool that constantly flood.
Any other questions? Motion is second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Ruschlinski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Are you done with your thing, Dan?
They're all open.
Anything? They're all open. That's it. We don't know who it is. We know nothing. It's
I mean, I could tell you. I could tell you they're from all the other folks that have submitted before. Burke Engineering. This is Ciorba. Patrick Engineering is the box. Commonwealth Engineering and SEH.
Okay. Moving right along, statements, my favorite. Statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us with this, please come up to the podium, state your name and address, and help us, please. Going once. There we go. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'll say something. My name is Steve Trushin. I own Gary Bridge and Iron Company, which is along 37th Avenue, west of Grant, between Grant and Chase. I'm going to tell you again that the areas that you're trying to develop things in, I see that there's some other proposal to lease some property next to Berkheimer. All this property belonged to farmers that was acquired for flood control. It is still very flood prone. I mean, you folks think maybe the dike is there and the dike is going to protect it. The dike was there to keep the water in the river. It does not do anything to get the water from the land into the river. You pump it. If the pumps don't pump, this stuff is going to flood. And if you try to pave more of this, I mean, we try to make people all over the county put in detention ponds so that you don't have more flood water to deal with. But to pave this stuff and to try to sell this property or lease this property for them, for Maya or whoever else is that, you platted a subdivision across from my shop without telling me either, I might add. This is very irresponsible. It's going to come back and bite everybody. I mean, whatever water gets displaced down there is going to go into somebody's basement or in the main floor of the house. And everybody thinks that they know what the 100-year flood is. I don't think we've seen it. I've seen four or five of them in my lifetime, and I'm only close to 100. I've seen 8 feet of water in that land down there between 35th Avenue and the dike. I ran a boat down there. I've been there my whole life. This thing is going to flood real bad. I mean, there was water all the way around that Lake County Association of Retarded building and the Berkheimer property several times in my lifetime. This is not a good idea to be paving that stuff or selling it. I mean, if you think that you need the money that bad, get it someplace else. Don't get it from that property. This is a real bad thing that this board is trying to do good things for drainage in the county. But really this project, I mean, the project helped to some extent, but it didn't help completely. And this stuff is going to flood. It's the lowest place along the whole watershed. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Good evening, Sam Henderson, staff attorney for the Hoosier Environmental Council and resident of Gary, Indiana. I just had a question following up on what Mr. Trushin was speaking about. As I assume the members of the board are aware, the commission recently listed for license the property at 3,400, I believe it's 3,400 or 2,400 less. 35th Avenue in the Berkheimer, sort of from Berkheimer over to the Village. And I was just curious if anyone here is able to tell me if that listing was based on someone approaching the commission, or if it was just a decision that was made that this particular property was appropriate to license out.
Mr. Wicklund?
As I understand it, the commission is seeking interested parties to work in the city of Gary to for the betterment of Gary. This is surplus property that is has been deemed not necessary for our use. Dan, I don't know if you want to add anything. In other words, we took this property knowing it was going to be surplus, but it was at a lesser price than we would normally have paid because we actually took more land than we needed because the farmer wanted to get rid of it. We're just testing the waters. No determination is made necessarily whether this is going to be a license or whether it's going to be a sale or a lease.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
I'm Paula Icelampy, the president of the Hobart Historical Society, and I understand the work that you're doing because I was one of the victims of the 2008 flood, because I had literally water coming underneath my back door. I'm just disappointed that there wasn't more of an effort to save Kennedy Arches. I don't know whether you're aware, they are one of the oldest structures in the city of Hobart, built in 1854. And due to those arches, is why we have Hobart. George Earl, the founder of Hobart, when they couldn't make it from Valpo to Hobart, invested in the Penzi Railroad to bring the railroad to Hobart and beyond. That's why we are here. And I just wish there would have been more effort to save those arches. According to several railroading magazines, it's the most painted and photographed railroad bridge in the entire nation. And, you know, it's just a great loss. And I just wanted to make that known.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Brandon Dothager. I live at 8021 Glenwood Street, Highland, Indiana. You know, it's easy for the Monday morning quarterback to say that what the coach should have done after the game is over. But when the decision is before you, and I have on my desk a motto that says, "The buck stops here," the decision has to be made. President Truman was known for this. The president, whoever he is, has to decide. He can't pass the buck to anybody. No one else can do the deciding for him. That's his job. This board could learn a lot from President Truman. Time and time again, the public has attended these meetings to oppose Maya Energy. Instead of accepting responsibility, every board member I've spoken to has passed the buck. I want to be clear. The reason so many citizens show up to this meeting is because they know that the buck stops here. You can't fool them. And frankly, I find it insulting to the community's intelligence that members of this board try to argue that they don't have control over the land that they own. I'd like to give a quick analogy. Let's say, for argument's sake, that the city wants to build a gazebo in my backyard on my property. The city gets all the necessary permits. The construction companies are lined up. Contracts for the project are all bidded out. Can the city build the gazebo? What do you guys think? No, because the property owner didn't give permission to build the gazebo. I think it's funny that a 24-year-old understands property rights more so than the members of this board. You own the land, the buck stops here. Before I leave, I'd like to give the most absurd example of passing the buck. After a recent meeting with the board, Mr. Gazdecki, I had a conversation with you about opposition to the project. You had two responses to me. First was, hey, why don't you go look at the problem that there is with Hart's Ditch? Well, that's great and all, but having a problem somewhere in your organization is not an excuse to abandon the purpose of your organization, which is to protect the land and our floodplain. And then the second thing you said to me that was that you really had to go because you were pressed for something to do after that. What you had to do after that, Mr. Gizdecki, was meet with the rest of the members of the board at Giovanni's and have spaghetti and wine over how you're commodifying the public land.
There you go, Brandon. You're correct.
Okay.
All right. Of us were present, and we all ate spaghetti. And all that wine.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth Palacio. I live in Chicago, Indiana. And I want you to know, I don't know how many people know in this room, that there are 164 dumps in the city of Gary. This one that you're proposing to be there, the Maya dump, it is just that. That road is won't sustain that weight. The children that are in that school, 96 feet from the dump proposed to be there, they're 96 feet from it. Not 96 yards, 96 feet. And they will be subjected to all the crap that comes around there, mice, with every other bad thing that a dump attracts, even if it's sorted. You have to take these children into account. Like I said, Gary has 164 dumps. We do not need another one. Find something more viable in another part of the area and not on the people's land that we own. We paid to it to clear it with our tax money. These children need to learn. That's a great area right there for them to learn in. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Terry Stiegel. I live in Highland, Indiana. I want to thank you all for setting up an email that we can all communicate with you through email. I think that was a wise decision you guys made. It makes it a little more easier for the public to make contact. And I guess we're in that stage probably where everybody's looking at budgets and planning and development and all those things for the commission. So I did send you folks an email discussing the navigability of the Little Cabinet River, and I guess, you know, just to take an overview, you know, looking from Munster to Gary and see what the issues are there, where maybe we can make some corrections to make that waterway, a navigable waterway, clean through. And you got the bridge work going on Kennedy, which is probably going to be a plus also in the planning of this process. And so I think this is a good time to consider these things and be able to try and adapt some things in here that meets the purpose of the law here that was enacted to have the commission, which was to protect the residents from flooding and create recreational opportunities. So I think kayaking and canoeing is a good recreational opportunity that we need to enhance the Little Cabinet River. And I think we need to take a serious look at where we can put some, and I think we need to have a short-term plan and a long-term plan. Because I know that, you know, it's probably not possible to have a navigable river from Munster to Gary at this time, but there should be a couple points along the river to where we could install a couple of launch areas to where, you know, at least you could have a point A to point B that could be navigable and usable, and it could be basically utilized that way and advertised that way. And we do have development, you know, right there at the Kennedy and Expressway, we have the visitor center, so they can help us promote that, which would be a good thing. You know, you have, you know, you got some restaurants and hotels there. I mean, that could be an activity that could tie into those facilities. So we need to take a serious look at this. And if you see Lake Station, I congratulate them. They just put their ADA boat launch in, and we need to see what we can do to do that on the Little Cabinet River also. And like I said, we need to figure out where those points A and B are for a short-term plan, and then maybe the long-term plan is there's going to be more of those launches along the river. So looking for your help and assistance and some money to make that happen. I know Highland's looking to do some things. They've been trying to do some things for years. And I think we've got about 11,000 households that contribute to the Little Cabinet River every year. So you add those numbers up, and we'd like a little piece of that, especially where we can enhance this for the whole area here to make it a more of a recreational concept. And maybe stop going in the wrong direction, let's go in the right direction as far as creating that recreational opportunity. It will also coincide with some of the development things that communities are looking to do, like in Hammond and Highland right now. And they're looking at Kennedy Avenue Corridor in Highland to do some development there. This would be, another, again, one of those things that would help out there. We got the rookery over there on Klein Avenue in Little Cal that's in bad shape. We need some help over there because that rookery is we're losing a lot of nests over there, so we're losing the birds. So, I mean, there's a lot of things there that need to be looked at that we can't ignore that we'd like the board to make sure they pay attention to in the process of planning things for the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name is Barry Haldimson. I'm from Munster. As long as you're getting into the real estate business, I was wondering if you have a list of these properties that are, what did you call them? Surplus. Surplus. Do you have a list of those surplus properties so that I can forward them to, you know, hog farmers and other people that may be interested in siting within the Gary City limits? You have a list.
We're working on that list.
Are you?
Because there is no process that when we inherited this after the flood and how to handle those types of properties. So, in fact, there was actually no list when I first got put on this after 2008. So, as we've discussed on numerous occasions as it pertains to this, first and foremost was to clean up the challenges that we inherited after the flood and work on those types of issues. Then trying to make sure we can get in and do access, get in with the maintenance. We've done the paving and trying to do the bypass, trying to make sure that we have all of those things that are tied together to create a ring around the river to be able to do that. Trying to assess and do an inventory. We're getting there.
Well, I mean, will that be made publicly available?
Sure.
Okay. So the Maya Energy site is the first one?
The first one what?
That you have committed to a commercial enterprise?
Outside of farming, cell phone towers, and billboards.
Those seem to be a lot more neutral. This is quite a bit.
Well, those are all things that fit under that parameter.
Okay. Right,
so, yeah, we'll make sure that gets put out there once that gets approved.
I'll continue to ask and
sure.
Make sure that...
And you can also go and look on the GIS at the county and see the list of the things that were put together. Those are listed just like your house is, everything else as it pertains to the ownership.
And they're sortable based upon Calumet Basin?
You and I are computers, and it's the county, so, you know, I can't say how you will go about doing that.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Sure. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Yeah, Tom Silich, 3820 Roach Street, lifelong resident here in Hobart, and I would like, on the lighter side, thank the commission for the work that they're doing on Deep River. We've got a good section now from, it'll be the Trestle Bridge, to Highway 6 will be cleaned by the end of this week where they can canoe and kayak. And we brought out about 350 ton of lumber out of that river in 4 weeks, 4.5 weeks. So glad to be part of that project and glad that we are spending money very wisely. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, moving right along. Mr. Ware, anything to say?
I guess I would just like to thank the mayor and the staff for hosting us here this evening. I was with Dan at the pre-construction kickoff for the bridge here in Hobart that got kicked off, I believe that was late July, August, possibly. Your Parks Department director was there. She did a great job of basically letting everybody know what needed to happen and had the best interest of the residents with all the civic events and everything that happened there. I came away really impressed with her professionalism and the way she handled that. Kudos to you and your staff.
Mr. Whitaker.
just in brief, it's good to see the city of Hobart doing something forward-thinking with the bio-augmentation and something to, as well, increase the recreational and economic aspect of it as well, at the same time incorporating the safety aspect into it. I do want to comment on, and thank you, Mayor, for having us here for this venue, and do want to comment on, you know, as well, that we're addressing some of our safety things in the city of Gary, and sometimes, you know, things that may appear to be a little political, you know, at certain times of the year, you know, they are for the good of the municipality and for public safety. And so it's good, again, to be forward-thinking in that process, not just City of Hobart, but also other municipalities here in the region. And I want to thank all the folks that came out. We're trying to make some rounds here. And it's been a couple of years since we've been here, so we hope to go somewhere else next time. So if you don't see us relatively soon, it's multiple other municipalities in the watershed that do help support this initiative. Yeah, but we're still have our home base over in Munster, so want to continue to invite everyone out even from the Hobart area to come and be a part of our meetings. Thank you,
Mr. Wyszynski. Reiterate what LaVon said. Thank the city of Hobart for letting us take our show on the road, so to speak. We like to go out in the communities when we have things going on here, especially with the railroad bridge and the presentation. And we appreciate that. Also want to acknowledge Mr. Silich for his help in getting us into Deep River. We've been talking about getting in there for years and cleaning that out, and you facilitated access into the river, so that's huge. But we got a long way to go. So it took out a lot, but there's definitely a lot more work to do. So thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Mr. Gazdecki.
I'd like to thank the mayor and everybody that came and gave their opinions tonight. I'd like to thank Bob Fulton for an excellent presentation on the bio-augmentation. It sounds really interesting, and it's really forward-thinking, as LaVon says. And I'd like to thank Terry for his comments regarding access. It's something that we've been talking about since I was appointed to the commission, and it comes with a lot of complications. It's certainly something that we have a plan for. We're very limited as far as how far we can go into the river with pavement, what we can enter, what we can even put into the river as far as materials. So, you know, unlimited access is probably not something that's going to happen without a lot of permitting and a lot more time going by. But coming up with the master plan would be a great idea, and I think that's something we should try to target for 2019. To at least identify, you know, some areas, maybe within Munster, Griffith, and Gary, to get more access to the river. Thank you.
Mr. Nimitz.
I'd just like to thank the City of Hobart for hosting tonight's meeting. Appreciate this new venue, and thank you very much for attending tonight.
Mr. Castellanos.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say that I can't really comment what everybody else said, because whatever they said, I agree. But I will tell you one thing, though. That I'm no stranger to this city. My boys played against City Bridges for years. We've always enjoyed this city here, and we enjoyed the restaurants, me and my wife and my family, when we were here. But I do want to say one thing, though, that recently Dan and Repe and I took a little presentation to the city, Gary, for Councilman Rogers, and it was received well. We really got an understanding about what we really do. I mean, so it was more of a video presentation, but so we would like to do the same thing here for the city of Hobart. Get the people out and let them see what we really do, let them ask questions and maybe have a soda or two, and that's about it. The other thing I want to say is that we also have a radio program, and next month, we haven't confirmed it yet, but we have two physicians from Methodist Hospital. Is going to be on. We have our show starts the second Monday of the month, which is going to be November the 12th, and it starts 9 o'clock. It goes from WLTH Radio, Channel 1370. And so we talk about a lot of other things just besides just the environment, but also talk about the health and food and things that affect us as a people. But the most important thing is it's a unifying so that people get understanding that the people in Gary are just as much as concerned about the people of Hobart as the people in Maryville and in Munster and everything else. We are Northwest Indiana. We are Hoosiers. You know, that's what they call us downstate and everything else. And so we should band together and work with each other. So hopefully that everybody gets a chance to listen to us. But thank you for bringing us here. Look forward to coming back here again, hopefully next month. Thank you.
Mr. Whipple.
Nothing there.
All right, folks. If you haven't had a chance to sign up, I'll put your email on there. There'll be a blast out on that. Also, make sure you check out the website. For as long as I can remember, we post all of our meetings as it relates to audio, so you can hear all this greatness later if you want. Also, check on the monitors by the, what's the name of the U.S. Geological?
They're on our website, so you just have to go
to the governmental entity.
USGS.
USGS. And, next meeting is Wednesday, November 14th, which is always the second Wednesday. Check the website on the location. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, and thank you for the hospitality.